When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to this podcast. I'm Dr. Caroline Leaf, and I'm thrilled that you've joined me. And today we're going to talk about traumatic brain injury. I practiced for 25 years clinically. I don't practice anymore. I now teach the brain-mind connection concepts around the world globally and write books and do programs. But today in this podcast, I'm going to talk about some of the things that I did with my patients in therapy who had suffered from traumatic brain injuries, because we get so many emails and so many questions about this. And there is stuff that you can do. And I had some tremendous results with my patients, and I want to share that with you, that if you or a loved one has gone through anything like this, there is hope. There is something that you can do. Now, right up front, I just want to say I'm not a medical doctor. I'm not a neurosurgeon. I am a mind specialist. I'm trained as a communication pathologist and cognitive neuroscientist. And what I would do in my practice is work with patients once they had gone through the medical care and they were basically in a recovery process. I would then they would come to me in my practice, and I would help them to restore their cognitive, their thinking, their intellectual, their social, their emotional, their communicative, academic work, whatever skills they require to fit back into life and for their life to be able to carry on as normally as possible, and even to improve in some cases. Now, I have to also tell you that many times I would begin working with these patients very early on in the hospitals and things, and when very early in their recovery period. Sometimes I would work with them a year or two after they had their accident, and they were starting to, you go through a natural spontaneous recovery period after any kind of head injury for about 12 months. There's a natural spontaneous recovery period that occurs. And I've worked with patients during that spontaneous recovery period, plus after that spontaneous recovery period. And the reason I'm sharing this with you is that in both situations, I saw dramatic improvement with the kind of approaches that I had chosen to use in my practice. I also found that when I began working in this field in the 80s, there was very little information and hope held out there for this kind of patient. This idea that the brain couldn't change was kind of a strong worldview in terms of science and mind-brain health, etc., right up to the mid-90s when brain technology like the fMRI machines and things, that kind of brain technology was discovered and researched, and people started seeing inside the brain and seeing, oh, actually the brain can change in response to the mind. So back in the 80s when I was working in this field, and I proposed that if you deliberately and intentionally use your mind to think in a different way and really try and build a patient's brain through thinking and deliberate thinking through their academics or whatever the patient was interested in, that you would be able to change brain function. And I was told at that time that this was actually a ridiculous notion. Many of my professors told me at the time that your brain can't change. Why are you trying to do this kind of thing? Just teach your patients to compensate and just, you know, adjust to the changes that had come into their life. And I never believed that, because, you know, instinctively we know that we can improve. And there was a dearth of research. It was not much research at all proving this. I was kind of alone out there, and there were a few of us around the world that were working in this particular arena of trying to change, with using the mind to change the brain. Anyway, I proceeded to develop techniques and work with patients that had severe traumatic brain injuries, and the results were phenomenal. I mean, we were all surprised, myself, my professors, that at the response when you teach a person to deliberately and intentionally use their mind, it really does cause the brain to change. This is some of the first neuroplasticity research that was actually done back in the 80s, the work that I did. And neuroplasticity means the brain can change. Neuro means brain. and plastic means to change. So what the research that I was doing was showing was that with our mind, we can change our brain. And as I said, from the mid-90s, it was accepted, this concept of neuroplasticity, and the changeable nature of the brain or the malleable nature of the brain is very accepted now, but back in the 80s, it wasn't. So it was quite radical, the techniques that I was using, but the techniques were effective and I used them for many years, and currently they're very, this kind of approach is very popular now to help patients in recovery. And essentially what it entails is that you've got to learn, you've just got to think, use your mind and really think deeply. And as you think deeply about things, you create structural change inside of your brain. And when you do that, you change the neurotransmitters in the brain, you change the electrical chemical balance, you change the neurochemistry of the brain. You literally create very fertile environments for brain growth inside the brain when you deliberately think. So just some practical, you know, what does this look like practically? Because you may be thinking, well, I know someone or I've got a loved one or whatever that really could benefit from this. Well, one of the techniques that I developed was I would use my patients' academic, whatever, let's take a simple example. Whatever the patient's need was that they felt that they wanted to achieve or change in their life, that was what I would use as my starting point. So it was very important for me to take a very, very intensive case history in order for me to identify the context of the patient's life and their needs. So I considered the whole person in their context very important. I would also involve the whole family because we are all entangled in each other's lives. So when someone goes through this kind of trauma and they change their personality and they change their skills change and their abilities change, the whole family needs help. This becomes a very family-oriented approach, a caregiver approach. So I would never work with just the individual alone. I would always work with the individual within the context of their family to get a support system going, because this is, you know, it's hard work to change your brain, as we all know just from our own lives, just trying to deal with things like depression and anxiety, etc. It's hard work, but it can happen. So that was one of the big things, was to have the family approach. Secondly, I would, as I say, take a very full case history and look at the context of my patient's life and see what was their need. So not so much, I would always consider the need or the perception of the parents or the teachers or the work colleagues or whatever. I would always consider that as part of my treatment design, but I would always look at the patient's need. What do you want to change? What do you want to improve in your life? And I found that the most powerful, because if you are changing what you see as a desire of yours to change, not someone else's desire or someone telling you that you need to change this, then you take ownership of that issue, you take ownership of that goal. And so I would set goals for my patients, and sometimes they were totally unrealistic. So we would have to work backwards from those goals to an achievable goal. But it was driven by the patient. So all my therapy was very family-centered and patient-centered, driven by the need of the patient, helping them to identify it as far as possible. Then what we would do is take, like, for example, if they were at school and they had lost a period of time at school because of the trauma and they hadn't, you know, they'd missed a few months or years or even of school, then, but if their desire was to go back and be able to finish schooling or complete schooling or do some more schooling, whatever that need was, I would work with that material. So I would bring that material as the material into therapy. So they would, so let me give you an example of this. I had there's so many stories going through my head now, but one of my patients was a 16-year-old who had suffered from a terrible car accident. She was in a coma for over 2 weeks. The doctors had written her off. The neurologist had told the parents she'd be a vegetable if she ever came around. And this young girl did come around, very determined. The parents contacted me around about a year post-accident. She was 16 at the time of her accident. And she had, by the time she came to me, she had lost that whole of that 16 going on 17 years. So she'd lost a whole year at school in terms of going to classes and getting that academic training. And she had really progressed from, you know, it was amazing that she came around and came out of the coma. She had gone from being in a vegetative state to a very functional state, but she was academically functioning at around about a fourth grade level when she came to me. And I'll be honest with you, I was really quite nervous when I took this case on because it was very early in my career. And this is why I'm sharing the story with you, because it was a huge turning point in my work. And I told the parents, I can't guarantee, but these are the techniques they'd heard about what I was teaching. And I said, I'm not sure how it's going to work, so we're going to have to approach this from a very experimental point of view. Well, we took her goal was to get back into high school, to get back. Her peer group at that stage were going into their final year of school. Now that she's now functioning on a second grade level, we had literally 8 months to catch her up and get her into 12th grade. And that was quite a challenge, quite a goal that I thought was way too big at the time, but that this young girl was determined to do that. So that was her goal, and we had some sub goals underneath that. Long story short, we worked 3 hours a week. I worked with her 3 hours a week. She worked on her own every single day, her family supporting her. They had a whole regimen at home. We took her academic schoolwork. We started her on second grade. We went through all her subjects, and she literally relearned her schoolwork. Within 8 months, she caught up from a second grade level to a 12th grade level, went through 12th grade, passed with flying colors, and the results were absolutely astounding. There was an incredibly a very clear, distinct change once we had started a very deliberate, organized, and processed, disciplined approach. Like every day she would spend at least 1 hour with breaks, 1 to 3 hours every single day with breaks on her schoolwork. So she would take her math or her science or her social studies or her whatever the subject was, she would have the textbook, and she would then apply the techniques, a five-step process that I had developed in rebuilding the brain. And those five steps I have actually in my book called, I have a workbook and a DVD called the five-step learning, the switch on your brain with a five-step learning process. And that's a very simple adaptation of the process that I would teach this young girl. But it was reading. She would sit down for an hour with her family. She would read through a chunk of information. She would think it through. She would make notes, and she would talk about that. So there was a very deliberate, organized process. We applied this not only in her academic environment, but we also applied this in her social. She would practice, like, if she wants to understand a movie or plan a party. Or so we tried to practice this in various different environments. But the predominant training was in her schoolwork. That was her main goal. At the end of the time, not only did her academics improve, but she actually became she became an excellent scholar. So for example, math was always an issue with her before her car accident, and after her car accident with her traumatic brain injury, she suddenly became a math genius, which is phenomenal. She changed her skill level changed, and she to this day will attribute it to the fact that she learned how to think and how to apply and how to use her skills. And that's what my whole approach has been. I've worked with so many other patients, thousands over the years, where I have focused on teaching them how to not just read through the schoolwork, not just to take that work that you're doing at work or your skill that you've been trained in, and just not think that you really take it and really almost relearning that information. So it's a deliberate and intentional learning process, and that carried over not into just her academic skills, but also carried over into her social skills, her emotional skills. When we did various scales looking at her emotional improvement and her social improvement, there was a radical improvement. Not only did we see it on actual measures, scientific measures, but we also saw it in her general day-to-day functioning. And although we didn't work directly on the emotional side and on the initially, we worked initially just around the academic, there was carryover into the emotional. So the point I'm making, and one of the main tips I want to stress here, is that with your mind, you can change your brain. I was teaching her how to do that. And this is a big thing with traumatic brain injury. The big thing is that your brain has been damaged. Your brain has gone through shock. You get these shock waves that have shot through your brain, which have caused all manner of damage in the brain, but the brain can regrow. Those neurons, those damaged neurons that hold your memories, can regrow, but they can only grow if they are stimulated. So the signal that will stimulate the regrowth is your thinking, predominantly your thinking. Obviously, how you eat And your exercise regimen is extremely important as well. Eating healthy foods and doing exercise and so on, which is also always part of my patient protocol, my treatment protocol for my patients. But the main focus, the bulk of the focus, was on helping them to regrow their brain. And this is really what I want to bring home to you today, is that if you've suffered from a traumatic brain injury, very as soon as you possibly can, you, if it's yourself that I'm talking to you, if you've had the particular traumatic brain injury or if you've got a loved one, you need to get that brain stimulated. You need to start by, it might just be as simple as reading to that person while they're still in bed, so that they are thinking and hearing and thinking through concepts. Maybe it's their favorite stories, watching movies together, starting to talk through processes that they used to do, their work environment processes that they did at work. All kind, you need to stimulate. Obviously, you need to work within if they get tired and that kind of thing. But to do a build up towards a having a lot of stimulation during the day, potentially starting with maybe just 10 minutes and then could build up to a couple of hours a day of this mental stimulation is very, very important to help to change the brain and to grow the brain. So we are very we are very able to redirect our brain, and this is called directed neuroplasticity. It's a very it's actually a different way of approaching the traumatic brain injury. It's not I don't recommend medication unless there's obviously medication for a if there's some kind of heart issue or blood clots, or if there's some kind of medical need. Obviously, then you're on medication for that. What I don't recommend is psychotropic medication like antidepressants and those kind of things, because those will inhibit brain function. We never used those back in the 80s and 90s. That's quite a new thing. In the late 2000s, that people have been, you know, the early 2000s, it started where people started treating people with traumatic brain injuries with those kind of psychotropic medications. And the research does show that they're contraindicated. They don't actually support brain function. They actually go against brain development. So the main tip that I'm going to finally just sort of summarize for you in this podcast, because we will do more podcasts on this. And please send us your questions for, you know, if you've got specific questions related to this that I can get maybe more specific to help you. But the main thing I want to stress is that as you find your area of interest, your academic schoolwork, your university schoolwork, if you are not at work and this you've had a traumatic brain injury, what are you interested in? And stimulate your brain. Read a lot of reading, and then thinking about what you've read and making notes about what you've read. One of the main techniques that I would teach my patients is something called a metacogging. And metacogging is something that I developed. It's a way of writing that really forces the brain to work extremely hard. You have to think very, very deeply when you use it. It's very challenging. It's kind of time consuming. You get faster and faster with it all the time. But it's a way of writing down information that you are thinking about that forces you into deep levels of processing. And the deeper you process and the more organized you become around organizing information, the more you're going to stimulate brain growth. If you want to know more about how to metacog, I have a video on that, and I have a workbook, and I have more materials coming out on that in the future. But currently I have a workbook and book, and that's basically called the Switch on Your Brain with the 5-Step Learning Process. Very important in terms of the family is the family does the therapy with the patient. So when I would have a patient working with me, like, for example, that young girl that I described her story at the beginning of the podcast, I didn't just work with her. I would work with her mother. I work with her father. I work with her her brother and her sister. And so they learned the technique along with her. So they would, when she was doing practicing her therapy sessions, they were doing it too, but they were applying it in their own life. Like, her brother was still at school, her sister was at work, etc. So the whole family got involved doing it together, and that support creates tremendous changes inside of the brain and empowers one to actually go have the strength to push through in those difficult times. So I encourage you, don't give up. There is so much that you can do if you've had a brain injury. Thank you for listening today, and I look forward to sharing more information with you in the next podcast.